This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Huge night tonight. LSU, Iowa, UConn, USC, both games on ESPN. 7 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Eastern, respectively. The women's game is flying right now, and we are pumped up tonight for LSU, Iowa, UConn, USC to join South Carolina and NC State in the Final Four. This is Unsportsmanlike with Evan Canty and Michelle, coming to you live from the Seaport, brought to you by Grey Goose. And over the weekend, the Washington Post story did come out, guys, about Kim Mulkey, the head coach of LSU. And it was an interesting story, maybe for those who didn't know much about her. For those who are aware of Kim Mulkey and her relationship with her players, or in some cases her lack thereof in terms of relationship with the players after they graduated, I don't know how many new things were in there. It was just truly a profile of someone that was pretty fair, actually. I did not think in any way, shape, or form that came off like a hit piece. It was about her relationship with her family, her players, her coaching history, her love and admiration for Pat Summitt, former Tennessee head coach, and the fact that there was some things that in terms of personal, private life conversations that she did not want to make public for some players. And that was obviously, I don't want to say exposed Smalls in this piece, but discussed in this piece, as well as, I don't know how to take this in terms of the weight and conditioning things for some of her players. She was very much like, hey, person X gained some weight, you need to get back in shape, whatever it may be. And sexuality of some players was discussed. And what they reported in the Washington Post is that she was not interested in allowing the players to kind of express themselves publicly as to their sexuality, their style, et cetera, et cetera. These are all topics of conversation that had been profiled and featured previously about Mulkey, and yet players still want to play for her and win for her. So I don't know what she was so upset about, because it was like just a fair profile, I thought, of her.
Yeah, I was a little surprised that that was her reaction about the piece after I read it. And granted, she didn't know what was coming down the pipeline when she made those comments. I'm sure she expected it to be much worse or to be less favorable towards her. But I read it on the way to Boston. I obviously went there for the UConn-Illinois game, and so I was reading it on my way there. And I'm going through it, and I'm like, what? This isn't explosive at all. We're not really learning new information about Kim Mulkey and the way that she goes about her business and coaching. We know how tough she is. We know that she is somebody that, for lack of a better term, isn't going to be messed with. She's going to hold strong in her beliefs and the way that she goes about things. The one thing, guys, that I did find a little bit surprising, and I know why it was included, because they're trying to give you a full profile of Kim Mulkey as not only a coach, but a person, and all of the things that have happened in her life that have allowed her to become who she is. I thought it was a bit interesting to read about her family and how she doesn't necessarily have a relationship with her family at this point, that they haven't talked in a long time, and to have her dad and her sister making comments about how they hope that they can come to a place of peace and that they can rekindle those relationships. In reading that, it felt a little bit voyeuristic for me, because I know this woman as an incredibly successful coach. I know her in the sports realm, and they tied it into her as a person, but I was just like, I don't know if that is something that she would love to be out there in the ether, that she doesn't have a great relationship with her family. But other than that, I thought it kind of landed with a bit of a thud based on the reaction that we got from Kim Mulkey when we first learned that this piece was forthcoming.
The fact of the matter is, Kim Mulkey is good for college basketball.
Big time.
I mean, she is. I mean, think about her personality. Think about how she presents, even the flashy clothes that she wears on the sidelines. I mean, how fiery she is, how much personality her teams play with. And they really embody, you know, her mentality of being dogged in their approach and how they grind down opponents. So I love the fact that Kim Mulkey is uncompromising in terms of her vision when it comes to the kind of teams that she's putting out there on the court. And she takes pride in her product. I mean, even when they had back and forth, like when they got into it with South Carolina, Kamala Cardoza took a shot at one of her players. Like, I love the fact that, you know, she keeps that same energy that you would anticipate players having in terms of how passionate she is and how fired up she is. So I understand that nobody's perfect. And there are always going to be personality quirks when it comes to these high-performing individuals. And certainly you can apply that same logic to Kim Mulkey. But on the whole, I think she's great for the women's game. I think she's great for basketball as a whole. And I can't wait to watch her team play tonight.
Absolutely. And, you know, coming off the heels of watching The Dynasty on Apple about the Patriots and Bill Belichick, it seems like these coaches who are really tough and, as you said, uncompromising in not only who they are but how they build their program get villainized in a way.
Oh, Bob Knight. Bob Knight is case in point. Like he's one of the greatest all-time coaches. I mean, that 76 Indiana team undefeated. I understand it. Like, I get the logic. They don't know where the line is, and sometimes they end up crossing it. But like I said, on the whole, their players – end up being the better for it when it comes to being better basketball players and more often than not being better people. So I struggle with being overly critical of it just because I understand that, you know, sometimes the lines get blurred when it comes to this level of competition. And like Evan said earlier, she has no shortage of players that are lining up to come play at LSU.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because of the excellence that she's been able to establish since she came over from Baylor.
It feels that's
a huge part of it, what you just said. Sorry to interrupt there on that small. It's like Angel Reese is playing for her.
Mm-hmm.
Like Angel Reese, if any point Angel Reese is like, you know what? I don't like this woman. I want to go somewhere else. I think I'm pretty certain that someone would give her a scholarship and NIL. Like, I'm pretty certain on that one, right? And then, like, so that's, like, every – just talking about the basketball side of it, because there's real-life stuff in there, as Smalls mentioned. The basketball side, I agree with you, CeCe. The reason she's great for college basketball is it gives us a villain. She's the villain. She's the villain. Caitlin Clark is the hero. She, Kim Mulkey, is the villain. Simple as that.
What is Dawn Staley?
A badass? Dawn Staley, that's interesting. If you're going to do the character, like the character development of women's college basketball right now, so you have, if you're going to say, like, all right, who needs to be classified as something? Caitlin Clark is the hero. Mm-hmm. I would say Kim Mulkey is the villain. Dawn Staley, it's just untouchable. Like, it's almost like, all right, yeah, well, we know she's there. Nobody's beating her. Like, I don't know how you classify her, and I don't know how you classify Angel Reese, Juju Watkins. I don't know how you classify that level of greatness. They don't seem to be hero or villain. You almost just seem to be in awe of their performance, right?
Yeah, but usually when a team is that dominant, they're like the de facto villain almost. And it doesn't feel like Dawn Staley in South Carolina is that. You're right. We kind of channel that towards LSU and Kim Mulkey and to some degree Angel Reese, even though mm-hmm. I don't think she's the villain. She said she's willing to embrace that role. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Dawn Staley is an interesting one because normally we do want to villainize dominance.
Yeah.
And we don't necessarily do that with her or with that program. But going back to Kim Mulkey for a second, I think sometimes greatness is all-consuming. Like, in order for you to be that great and to be that dedicated to what you do, you have blinders on in a way. And I think that that's one thing that I definitely took out of that piece is that in order for her to get to this point, she had to develop this tough exterior. And she had to put herself in this position where people weren't going to like her. And you, just like with Bill Belichick, though, people go there because they know what the results are going to be.
Yeah.
Same thing with Kim Mulkey, not only at LSU, at Baylor. They know that she is a winner and that it's going to be really tough. The conditioning is going to be tough. The style of coaching is going to be tough. But she finds a way to extract the best out of the women that she coaches.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I had a chance to have Kim Mulkey in studio after her most recent championship at Baylor. And it was great just sitting there talking to her and seeing how her mind works around the game of basketball. And just in terms of the vision that she has for not only the type of team she wants to put together, but the traits that she wants her players to have. Mm. It reminded me a lot of Bill Parcells in the way that she went about her business, like not wanting to have players that don't resemble other players that she's had success with in the past. And so she has a clear vision on not only what the team is going to be, but the kind of players that she wants to bring into her program. And again, she's not going to relax the standards. She's not going to compromise on her vision. And you can't help but respect somebody that's that dedicated to success in trying to have their team compete at the highest level of the sport. I just don't understand why we want to demonize her for that, because that's what it takes in order to be truly great. And there's no question about it that she is one of the titans when it comes to all of coaching, not just women's basketball.
Mm-hmm. Cece, go explain to everybody what you mean about the comps of Parcells. I always find this so interesting when you bring this things like this up with Coach Parcells, because it's not like, hey, I need somebody that can score 20 points a game. It's the literal, like, when you played for Parcells, he told you you reminded him of someone, right?
Yeah, he told me I reminded him of Leonard Marshall. That's why he drafted me. He said, you remind me of Leonard Marshall, a player that I've had a lot of success with in the past, and that's why I'm drafting you. I watched tapes of Leonard Marshall when I played for Al Groh, who was a Bill Parcells disciple at Virginia. Again, it was a certain mold.
Right.
It was a certain type of player. Not just what the player actually looks like, but how the player approaches the game, the toughness, the overall skill set, all of those different things. And you got a lot of that from Kim Mulkey in terms of how she sees the game of basketball. And that's why I can't help but respect it. Like, it's hard to have this level of sustained success and then to carry over that success from Baylor to LSU. That ain't easy. No. The fact that she's doing it at two different programs to be able to have them in the upper echelon of the sport. Like, there's something special about how she goes about doing what she's doing. She's got the secret sauce. She's figured it out. Whether you like her approach or not, it works. And last time I checked, we love winners when it comes to sports. We love people that win when it comes to life. I mean, I guess to sit here and to take shots at Kim Mulkey because she's been she's one of the bigger figures in all of sports. I think it's a little bit unfair. Again, I thought the WAPO profile was fair, and based on what you two have told me about it, I mean, you see it the same way. I don't understand why we obsess about that when we should be talking about the greatness of her program and how they've been able to get back to this point yet again in a consecutive season.
Because we love greatness, but we also resent it in a lot of ways as a society. We love to watch people achieve things that we feel that we could not. That's why we love sports. We love to watch people collectively go towards a goal and achieve it and be at the level of greatness, but only to a certain extent. Mm. And then we start wanting to take you down. We want to start disassembling your greatness or not liking you for a certain way. It happens with all great teams. It happened with the Patriots. Look at Kim Mulkey. I mean, we could go what really consistently dominant program throughout sports do we love? I mean, even Nick Saban, people can't stand him in some ways, and he's been so great.
Do we feel that way about the Chicago Bulls in the 90s?
You know, that one's interesting because we really romanticize Michael Jordan, and we romanticize that run.
Yeah.
But if you weren't a Chicago Bulls fan at that time, and we did find
somebody to demonize, though, Jerry Krause.
There you go.
Scottie Pippen doesn't like that run as much, I guess.
Oh, is that what he told you on the No Bull Tour?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I just want to be clear on one thing. With the Kim Mulkey feature in the Washington Post, if what they reported about the way in which she treated some players is true, I personally do not agree with her treatment of some players. But that said, we all know that, and there are people still signing up to play for her.
But here's the thing, Ev, and I get where you're coming from, and you're not wrong. Like I said, I do think that the lines get blurred when you get to this level of competition. But I'll also say this, man, having played for Al Groh, having played for Bill Parcells, having played for Tom Coughlin, having played for John Harbaugh, those guys didn't all handle all players the right way. I mean, Jimmy Johnson is famous for the quote, "I'll treat everybody fairly, but I'm not going to treat everybody equal." It's just not how it goes. And so I think we all want these high-functioning individuals to be well-adjusted, and that's just not how it works in terms of being great at something. If you want to truly be great at something, you're probably not going to be well-adjusted. Kobe Bryant talked about it in his basketball muse. He said, yeah, I'm probably not as good a friend or as good a husband or as good a father because I'm consumed with being great at this sport. Mm-hmm. Well, Kim Mulkey is consumed with being a great coach. And that's how she approaches it, and she's not going to be compromising in her vision for herself, for her players, and for her team, and overall her program.
Well, you'll certainly see the villain versus the hero tonight. LSU in Iowa, and we don't mean Angel Reese as the villain. We mean Kim Mulkey is definitely being portrayed as the villain. The hero, of course, Caitlin Clark. Then UConn. Oh, by the way, there's that Gino Auriemma guy, maybe the best coach in the history of women's college basketball, against USC and superstar freshman Juju Watkins tonight. 7 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. We're on Sportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Kendrick Perkins had some interesting tweets about the men's game, which we will get to in a little bit. But guys, Jets made a big move over the weekend. They go out there and trade for Hassan Reddick from the Philadelphia Eagles. The New York Jets have had a very interesting offseason. Now we know that their quarterback is not going to be the vice president. Or, that's a good step. Do we like what they've done? Dare I say that the New York Jets maybe in trading for Hassan Reddick from the Eagles, which basically becomes a swap of Bryce Huff, their former defensive end outside linebacker, for Hassan Reddick in essence. Do we like what the Jets have done? Have they kind of, they fall under that moniker of the Cowboys moniker of all in this offseason, guys?
I mean, how could you not like what they've done? They've addressed a lot of major needs, right? You lost Bryce Huff and you were able to bring in Hassan Reddick, a guy that's had 50 and a half sacks over the last four seasons. Mm-hmm. I mean, and he's going into his age 30 years. So, yeah, I think it's an outstanding get. Putting him on that defensive front with Jermaine Johnson and Quinnen Williams, I think that's got the men. John Franklin Myers, I mean, that's got the makings of a dominant front four pass rush. I like what they did with their offensive line, being able to bring in three new starters, including Tyron Smith and Morgan Moses, and then adding Mike Williams to play opposite of Garrett Wilson. What they've done is fortify pretty much every area of their team before the draft so they can go into the draft with the top 10 pick and not be forced to go down in a road that they don't want to out of need. They can take the best player available, which is exactly where you want to be, because there are going to be a lot of good players that fall to you based on the quarterbacks getting pushed up. The thing that it signals for me, though, Smalls, with the Hassan Reddick trade and the Morgan Moses trade and all of the offseason acquisitions that the Jets have made, they are putting more pressure on Aaron Rodgers to get it done in 2024. To me, like, that's what this is all about. They have eliminated every single excuse as to why Aaron Rodgers can't have success with this roster. And so that's why we have to look at this Jets team and look at Rodgers with a different degree of scrutiny, just because of how good a job GM Joe Douglas has done at filling out this roster and making it one of the more complete teams in football.
Absolutely. They've made some really, really smart moves. I love bringing in Reddick. He's a proven commodity. You mentioned 50 and a half sacks. You know exactly what you're going to get from him. We knew the Jets had a lot of talent last season, and obviously not having Aaron Rodgers out on the football field puts you at a huge deficit, no matter which way you slice it. But my question about the Jets heading into this season, even before they made some of these moves, wasn't about the talent on the team. They fortified themselves in a lot of ways, but it's about the cohesion. Can they find a way to have an identity and to be able to blend this all together? Because they took Aaron Rodgers out of the equation last year, and make no mistake about it, he's a big, big piece of the puzzle. But they fell apart in spectacular fashion. Yeah. You didn't see the Bengals do that when they lost Joe Burrow. You know, just because you lose the quarterback doesn't mean that you have to see this massive erosion from the team. And so my question about the Jets isn't necessarily about the talent on the team. It's about what they're going to do with it and how they're going to come together as a team.
All right, Smalls is Midwest nice. We know that, right? Mm-hmm. The St. Louis in her. CeCe, let's get to the New York and both of us. Mm. Really, what we're asking is, how are the Jets going to screw this up, right? That's really what we're asking.
That's what it comes down to. Yeah. It's going to be spectacular. And here's the thing. I don't know how it's going to happen, Ev, but you know what's going to happen. You can set your watch to it. It's just what it is. It's what the Jets do. There's a reason why they have the longest playoff drought in North American team sports. This organization can't get out of its own way. We saw it last year. Four plays in, the season was over with. Mm-hmm. And it shouldn't have been, right? Think about it. I mean, there were 66 different starting quarterbacks last year. For goodness sake, the Bengals had a winning record with Jake Browning as their starting quarterback down the stretch. They finished with a winning record on the season. Like, the Jets' season fell apart, and a lot of it was Aaron Rodgers, yes. But there were also some things behind the scenes culturally that wouldn't allow them to overcome that loss. And you're just wondering, from an intangible standpoint, can they figure that aspect of it out?
You said that this move and these other moves that they made this offseason puts a lot of pressure on Aaron Rodgers.
Yes.
I wonder then if the Jets are going to have a conversation with him about putting himself out there so publicly. Aaron Rodgers himself said it last year. Hold on, let me finish, because I know why you would laugh, Evan. I understand. They've given us no indication that they would do this. But last year, Aaron Rodgers himself said, if it doesn't have to do with winning football games, get it out of the building. And a lot of the stuff that he did last year put a big spotlight on the Jets and maybe could have contributed to it, the fractures that we saw in some way.
Yeah.
But him making headlines about certain things has nothing to do with winning football games.
No.
And so if the Jets really are taking away any excuse that Aaron Rodgers may have, I wonder if maybe they are positioning themselves a little bit in a powerful position. They're taking a little bit of control back, and that's something that they'll address.
I don't think they can take any control back, because the GM, head coach, and Rodgers are inextricably linked. If it fails for any reason, then I think all three of them will likely be gone. And I think that's the interesting part about Rodgers, because Joe Douglas and Rob Saleh may have another opportunity to get a job in the NFL, although it might not be in their current role. If this doesn't go right for the New York Jets this season, if they don't make the playoffs, then I could see a world where Aaron Rodgers is done in the NFL for good. I mean, we always use this last dance analogy or comparison when it comes to teams around sports. This is going to be the last dance for Aaron Rodgers if he don't make it to the playoffs. Like, that's where we're at right now, because the baggage that comes along with this dude, how you have to upend your organization when you bring him in the building, I don't know that there are a lot of teams, there are a lot of coaches, there are a lot of general managers that are willing to sign up for that based on the kind of player that he is now. Not the guy that we saw 3 years ago win back-to-back MVPs, but the kind of player he is now going into his age 40 season coming off of an Achilles injury.
I totally agree with you. I've said the same thing that you've said. I've echoed your sentiments, and I've been asked about it when I go on ESPN Wisconsin with Wildy and Tausch there. And they're like, oh, come on, you don't think that he's going to be in the league? And I said, no, because I agree with what CeCe said. Like, someone has to sign up for that. And what that is everything that goes into that, right? It's not just a football player. It's all – I mean, you played with a guy in Eli Manning – that you signed up for nothing, right?
Yeah.
Like, he's just going to – like, there was nothing with Eli Manning. And I mean that in a complimentary sort of way, right? Like, there's stuff with Aaron Rodgers, and that's okay. He's allowed to go on McAfee every single week. He's allowed to try to become the Jeopardy host or run for office or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
But if you're signing up for it, you're signing up for all of it.
Yeah, and you're staking your career on it, which is probably the bigger part, Ev. When you make that kind of move for Aaron Rodgers, you are putting your career on the line. And excuse me, but I think that would give a lot of decision makers pause, given what we've seen at the end of Aaron Rodgers' career in Green Bay and what we saw in his first year with the New York Jets. And it's crazy to think, because he only played 4 snaps in the Jets uniform. But all of the stuff that we've seen throughout the course of the season, down to him having the pregame warm-ups and keeping everybody on pins and needles about his return that was fugazi from the start, I just think that that's a special set of circumstances. And it has to be somebody that is incredibly desperate in order to sign up for it.
We're on Sportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. 2 things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority.
Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus! Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's electricebikes.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
A celebration of big men today on Unsportsmanlike.
Oh, this Zach is how Zach Edey woke up this morning right here.
Zach Edey.
Ain't nobody.
I mean, DJ Burns, Donovan Klingon, and now Damian Woody and CeCe. Smalls and I just observing it. The celebration of big men.
Hey, Evan. Hey, man. I'm glad y'all put me on to that, this morning.
Man,
I got a new appreciation for homeboy, man.
We need to put Zach Edey's jersey in the March Madness Hall of Fame.
Oh, he's in the rafters.
If there is such a thing, that's what he needs. His jersey needs to be there.
He's in the rafters.
Wherever James Harden's jersey hangs up, they need to put Zach Edey's jersey.
That's right. Right next to it.
All right, so Damian, before we get into football, ESPN NFL analyst Damian Woody here. So in all seriousness, there is a resurgence of the college big man right now. Look at what happened this weekend, are you as into it as CeCe is, as a fellow big guy, and looking what the game has become? It's not all the 5'10", 5'11", 6-foot guards this weekend.
You damn right I am. You damn right. Ain't nothing like, we got big smooths out there with the great footwork and all. What's my man DJ?
DJ Burns. Burns.
DJ Burns.
Go DJ. That's my DJ. I love it, man, because, you know, a lot of these, you know, for the longest, man, it's been all about the guards. We know that, right? Mm-hmm. Even in the NBA, it's been about the guards, but now we're seeing a resurgence of big men with the back to the basket with post-up moves. Like, it's almost like a circle. Like, everything old comes back new. And so we've been, you know, seeing that for the longest period of time, and then the game has transitioned to all of a sudden you got these point forwards and everything you've seen in the NBA.
Yep.
And now in the college game, in the Final Four, who's dominating? Who's the one? Who has the focal point? It's the big men for all these teams.
There's no doubt about it. And big fella, we want to get to your New York Football Jets, who made a sneaky big move on Friday, trading for Hassan Reddick. What'd you make of the move?
Man, you want to talk about pushing your chips all the way in? That's pushing your chips all the way in. Because usually, you know what? What's crazy is Friday is usually the Friday news dump.
No doubt. Well,
you know, and that was a news dump right there. Because I did not expect the Jets to pull off a trade for Hassan Reddick. Hassan Reddick is one of the best pass rushers that we have in our league. Talking about four straight years of double-digit sacks. I mean, he's one of the best pass rushers in the game of football. So as much as Jet fans were like just crying about losing Bryce Huff, and Bryce Huff is a really good player, Hassan Reddick is on a totally different level. And CC, I might add, I think he's going to be even more productive because he's not going to play as much like he did with the Philadelphia Eagles. Yeah. You know, the Jets, they like to rotate, keep guys fresh. So sometimes less is more. And so I'm excited to see that.
So with all that being said, Damian, what are your expectations for the Jets this season?
Oh, my gosh. It's like you got to go. You got to win, and you got to win big. It's not good enough to be 10-7 and barely squeaking in. The Jets going to have to make noise and make a deep playoff run because that's what all these moves, you know, amount to.
Yeah.
You go out here and you go get a Tyron Smith, okay? You go out here, you go get Mike Williams. You go trade for Morgan Moses. You go out here, you get Hassan Reddick with all the talent that they've already have on the team. And Aaron Rodgers come back? You got to make a deep playoff run if you're Robert Saleh and Joe Douglas, GM Joe Douglas.
So that being said, who's under more pressure to pull that off? Is it Joe Douglas? Is it Rob Saleh? Is it Aaron Rodgers?
I mean, let's ultimately the players play. The players on the field, but if Joe, if they don't make a deep run, they're gonna be gone. They're not gonna be. They're not gonna be here.
So is Aaron Rodgers gonna be back?
I would.
If they don't get to the playoffs, will Aaron Rodgers be back?
I don't know. Like that would be two years, right? Think about it. Last year was lost because of the Achilles, and then if you don't make it this year, that's 2 years of Aaron Rodgers. Plus, you know, he's 40 plus.
He'll be in his age 41 season going into 2025.
That's right. So 2024 is the year for the Jets. It's got to happen. Damn it, something's got to happen this season.
But can they get out of their own way? Because talent wasn't the issue that we had last year, and obviously losing Aaron Rodgers changes everything. But as we were talking, the Browns had quarterback issues. They didn't erode the way the Jets did. The Cincinnati Bengals lost Joe Burrow. You didn't see them erode in the same way. With the Jets, it's not the talent necessarily that we're concerned about. It's all the other stuff. Can they get out of their own way?
Well, I mean, that remains, you know, that's a big question that has to be answered, right? Because we all saw when Aaron Rodgers went down, the Jets didn't adapt well at all at the quarterback position. And we saw Nathaniel Hackett. Everyone talked about how this was Aaron Rodgers' offense. Okay, great. Injuries are a part of the game. We know that Aaron Rodgers is you know, older quarterback. So you got to be able to pivot when these type of things happen. The Jets couldn't do that. So the big question mark is Nathaniel Hackett the guy? You know, Aaron Rodgers. But if something were to happen again, are you going to be able to, you know, pivot and still make things happen? Because trust me, the mandate is a mandate. Woody Johnson not trying to hear anything this year after all the acquisitions that the Jets have made.
Not even slander from NFL Network reporters.
Yeah, no slander. Right, no slander from their own in-house network.
We're talking with Damian Woody, ESPN NFL analyst here on Unsportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance. All right, so you said it about the Jets. The Cowboys have claimed they're all in. We know they're not, obviously. Are there other teams, kind of a groupthink project for all of us right now, led by Damian here, are there other teams that we would label all in based on the off seasons that they have had thus far?
Houston.
Mm-hmm. Good one.
Houston, right now, like, man, Houston is that team. Houston's that team, man. They obviously went out and got Danielle Hunter. They've made a lot of moves. And that's what they're supposed to do. When you hit on the quarterback like the Houston Texans have done, like the clock starts running.
Yeah.
Because you know at some point in the next few years, you got to pay C.J. Stroud if he continues to ascend and continue to play at the level that we think he's capable of playing at. So the Houston Texans is the one that comes to mind right off the top.
Yeah, I mean, I got Houston, I got Philly, the Jacksonville Jaguars. I mean, they made a lot of good moves that I like. I mean, being able to add Mitch Morse, they added Eric Armstead on their defensive front. Like, that's a really good team. They come and they added Gabe Davis from the Buffalo Bills, Devin Duvernay, a return guy. They added Darnell Savage, a safety in free agency. Like, they've made a lot of win-now moves to try to compete with the Houston Texans, who are also making win-now moves. So that's another team. I'm going to throw out one food for thought, though. How about the Minnesota Vikings?
All in?
How about the Minnesota Vikings?
Oh, I thought you were going to say the Chicago Bears.
No, how about the Minnesota Vikings? Think about what the Minnesota Vikings are doing. Like, adding that first-round draft pick, that additional first-round draft pick to try to move up in the draft. They are going to move up and take a quarterback in the top five.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of where are they going to get. Are they going to get to three? Are they going to get to four? Where do they have to go in order to get that quarterback? But when you think about what that team has and what they've added in the last couple of years, that is a team that is going all in to try to win the division and get back into the postseason.
Wow. Well, speaking of the draft, Damian, it's April. We are counting down until the NFL draft, and obviously this draft, quarterback heavy. We've been talking a lot about the quarterbacks. A name that keeps coming out there, whose stock keeps rising seemingly, is J.J. McCarthy. Mm-hmm. Where do you rank him amongst the quarterbacks that we have in this draft?
I would probably have my third quarterback.
Uh-oh.
Third. So yeah. Give us the order.
Yeah, so me, I got Jaden Daniel, one. I got Caleb, two. And then I got JJ, three.
Wow.
Yeah. I think that, you know, everyone has a question marks about, you know, the way Michigan used him. They didn't rely on him, per se, as they with all these other quarterbacks that you see coming out right now. But I will say this, you know, he's young. He's 20 years old. He's an athletic guy. He's got a really strong arm. And I like the pedigree and the program he came from. He was coached by Jim Harbaugh. Mm. If there's one, like, Jim Harbaugh knows how to coach quarterbacks and knows how to get those guys right. And so for me, I like those aspects of his game. I think if he goes And it's really this way for all of these quarterbacks. More important, it's about where do you go will more than likely determine the success that you have. I think Minnesota is going to be very interesting.
Really?
Because, listen, Kevin O'Connell is a good coach.
Yes.
Yes, he is.
Okay. Josh McCown is a quarterback coach in Minnesota. So he got two guys who's played quarterback in the National Football League, and that's their specialty. Okay. I could see him going, if Minnesota makes that move with the two first-round picks that they have to go get a J.J. McCarthy, I like that. I would like that a lot.
I mean, that's a really good offensive line that you're stepping into. And, I mean, as far as –
with weapons?
As far as skill position
Jordan
goes,
Addison and Justin Jefferson.
T.J. Hockenson, Aaron Jones, they added in free agency. That's a great spot to be in.
That's a great spot. As much, we talk about – Caleb Williams possibly going to, you know, a good landed spot with the Chicago Bears. Imagine that. Whatever rookie quarterback that lands in Minnesota, that's a pretty good landing spot.
So you've given us the J.J. McCarthy, the guy that you like in terms of being that third quarterback, somebody with a lot of upside. Who's the quarterback in this class that you're most worried about going bust?
Drake May. I think – I know last year he had a lot like different coordinators, some guys that moved on to the National Football League, and when you have different casts of people around you, it can affect you. There's no question about it. I just think that when I watch, you know, Drake May, he's a very athletic guy, very talented, but I think he needs to clean up some things on the fundamental aspect, feet, all those type of things. I think he's a guy. I don't think he needs to be playing like right out the gate. Mm. I think he's a guy that needs to sit for a year, maybe take the Jordan Love route. Like, he just needs to sit and observe and kind of fine tune the final points of his game from a physical aspect before he jumps out there on the field.
Damian Woody, you'll see on SportsCenter on ESPN. Get up at 8 a.m. Eastern as well. We always appreciate his time. Coming up, I'm Over It on ESPN Radio.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And, boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season.
Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Each and every day at this time, Pat Costello gives us the items in and around sports, entertainment in his life that he's over on a day where we're getting ready for two games tonight. Women's college hoops, Iowa and LSU kicking us off 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. The men's Final Four is set. What could be bothering Pat? We find out now.
Plenty.
Okay, good.
The cleanup robots at the grocery store? What are we doing? Get out of the way. Those robots that just kind of drift around and get in your way and then scream about one grape being on the ground for the whole store to hear? Move out of the way. I'm pretty sure they're just filming us anyway. They're not actually there for any cleanup purposes. I hate them, and I wish they didn't exist.
What grocery store are you going to where they got the robots that are cleaning it up?
Well, they don't even clean it up.
It's there. I'm going to have to try to find this. I tweeted a video of it a while ago. I'm now going to look through my Twitter, at Evco Radio. It's there somewhere. It is so weird, guys. I'm surprised, CC, you haven't seen it. Oh, well, you know, you guys both live in New York City.
We live in the city. I mean, we don't live in the gated community.
Oh, here we go. Right.
Maybe in the gated community where they have their personalized grocery store.
Where do you think Evan and his family have the grocery store?
He wasn't talking about you, Pat.
And stuff. I'm just saying, maybe that's the part of New York City that it's reserved for.
Yeah.
Like the enclave that Evan Cohen lives in.
The luxury part.
Yeah, exactly.
See, how did this turn towards me? I don't understand this.
I mean, you're the one that
brought it up.
You're the one that lives on the gated street with the gated driveway. I'm just saying.
I don't.
Got to have a code to get on the street just to enter the code to the gate at his driveway.
Yeah, listen.
Don't you have a code to get in your building?
Oh.
I actually don't. No. Not in the new building I live in, no.
What about the other building you live in?
I did, but this building has a doorman.
So. Oh, okay. Oh, that's better.
And what about the other house?
It's New York City. I feel like a doorman for the building is kind of table stakes.
Yeah.
No,
most people have that.
Yeah, exactly. More people than not have doormen in New York City. Just putting that out there. Yeah.
But no, I don't know what you're talking about, guys, with this robot.
I just tweeted
thing.
It out. At Epco Radio. I tweeted it out. I found it. You'll see. Pat just confirmed that this is what we're talking about. Maybe Sam can get this on the TV side for people on ESPN2 to see it today.
I don't know why I just don't trust the robot to actually clean the floor properly.
I don't trust robots, period.
Hard stop.
Yeah. Hard stop.
Evan, yep, that's the one. Yeah, yeah. On your Twitter account. They're so annoying. They don't actually clean.
Weird.
It's just a camera that points out where other people should clean. They're the worst.
You've actually seen one of these in the wild?
Yeah, yeah. At the Stop and Shop that I go to, they have them all the time.
And I've never seen
them. They have eyes. They put eyes on them.
It looks kind of creepy, though.
They're terrible.
It looks very, very creepy.
But you have no idea, CeCe and Smalls, what to do. Like, do you walk at it? Do you have to Euro step it? You really have no idea what to do with this thing.
I mean, since it's just roaming around the store, maybe it could push my cart for me when I'm grocery shopping.
Yeah, there you go.
I mean, be helpful. If it's not actually doing anything in the way of keeping stuff clean, if somebody else actually has to do the cleaning, then at least push around my grocery cart.
You can't get Chives, your doorman, to do that for you?
No.
Chives.
No, Chives.
Actually, Chives? I'm a big Instacart person.
Oh, yeah,
I try to avoid the grocery store at all costs because, I don't know, grocery shopping with my wife turns into a 2 or 3 hour expedition. I try to avoid grocery shopping with my wife.
Instacart is such the play because I'm the person that goes grocery shopping and I'm like, ooh, truffle hot sauce for $19.99. I'll give it a whirl.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Marketers love me.
I know exactly what that is.
They suck me in every time. I'm just saying, when you see that 2-for-1, that buy one, get one free, buy one, get one half off, they got me every single time at the grocery store.
You know what I've been buying like crazy? I should tweet this out. Have you guys seen the Starburst-flavored sparkling ice?
Oh, no. You told me about that.
You brought it up before.
Oh, it's unbelievable. It's basically the cherry star. They have cherry, strawberry, and lemon. Starburst flavor, like sparkling water. Unbelievable. I can't stop drinking this thing. Anyway, sorry. Go ahead, Pat. I'll tweet it
out. But because it was Starburst is why you bought it in the first place,
right? You're damn right,
CeCe. That's the only reason why.
You're damn right.
Again, a marketer's dream. They got you.
I'm so easy.
Suckered you in.
I'm such a sucker.
I'm a sucker.
Next, Pat.
If you don't know how to cook, please keep your food off the internet. The amount of times that I see people tweet stuff and it just looks horrendous and I'm like, were there no checks here? Like, you didn't ask someone, like, hey, does this look good for Instagram or something? Hey, I'm going to put out this picture of brisket. How's it look? Awful. Don't tweet it. It looks terrible, and you're embarrassing yourself.
Okay, so, like, how do we judge this, though? Because your vision of what looks good may be different than someone else's. Isn't that a subjective thing? Like, CeCe.
Yeah, but you know.
Correct me if I'm wrong, CeCe. You said you and your wife we're going to try the Top Chef stuff at home, right?
Yeah, the Top Chef challenge. She was going to, because we love Top Chef, so she was going to try to make whatever was on the challenge for that giving week. Now, that doesn't mean she's going to post it on the internet, although we're not above it.
Right.
Because I've certainly posted her work before, but I don't think she's ever done that. So, yeah, I guess it feels like you're hanging on the rim a little bit. If you can cook or if you can't, posting your food on social media. And I guess I would ask this question back to you, Pat. Does that merit unfollowing somebody if they're posting what they're making for dinner all the time? Because, I mean, in order for you to see it, you got to follow them. So does that warrant you unfollowing the person if they're incessantly posting what they're cooking for dinner?
See, my problem is it's famous people. So, like, it just pops up even if I'm not looking for it because people just like dunking on famous people for tweeting out their terrible food.
Okay.
I mean, you know CeCe's famous, right?
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, but I've never seen him tweet out terrible food.
Right, but I'm saying, like, now he's going to be discouraged.
Well, you would never see that because my wife doesn't make terrible food.
Yeah, I was going to say.
That's my point.
The only food I remember CeCe ever sharing on social media is the duck on Thanksgiving.
Yes.
And it looked so good. So good.
Next one, Pat.
I'm a flip-flop guy, and I don't understand, and I don't want to hear any negativity about it. They're comfortable, they're convenient, and it's going to be hot out soon. I don't get the hate. I just want to wear flip-flops. That's fine. Everything's fine. We're all fine.
Do you take care of your feet, Pat?
Of course I do.
Are you getting a pedicure?
No.
So how do you take care of them, then?
I just at home.
What do you do to take care of them?
I trim them, clean them.
That's not enough.
It's not enough.
The toenails, yeah.
Just trimming your toenails is not enough.
I mean,
there's a lot of dudes out there who are walking around in flip-flops who have mangled feet. They are very unattractive feet. So, Pat, maybe the way that you feel about other people posting their food on social media is how people feel looking at your feet in flip-flops. Just consider that.
Well, that's their problem because I'm going to keep wearing them.
Let me ask you a question, Pat. Is it the shower shoes type of flip-flops or are they the Birkenstocks? I need to know.
No, because my wife is a big Birkenstock person.
I am not. I'm not familiar. Although she wants to get me involved with the Birkenstocks, I'm really just a shower shoe guy.
I don't know if I can see that with you.
I'm just really a shower shoe guy. Like, wear the regular flip-flops. That's just me. I don't know.
Smalls giving Pat life advice is something that's developed here, and I'm kind of into it because Pat doesn't know what he's doing and Smalls does. We're Unsportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance.
Thanks for listening to the Unsportsmanlike podcast on ESPN Radio. You can listen to Unsportsmanlike live weekdays from 6 to 10 a.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and on SiriusXM Channel 80. You can also watch on ESPN2 and on ESPNU. Unsportsmanlike with Evan Canty and Michelle.